Chapter 1. Arcus Orbital Plate, Terra. Kestros looked up when the door opened and came to his feet as Captain Catafalque entered. The assault commander looked at him for a long moment but said nothing. Catafalque's armor was still scratched and gore-stained from the battlefield, and a scabbed wound bisected his left temple. His cold eyes bored into Kestros. Kestros remained at attention, his eyes fixed on the corner of the cell. Thoughts flicked through his head, even as he held them back from showing on his face. He'd been ordered to his cell as the company had withdrawn from Damocles' starport. No explanation had been given, just a direct order that brooked no clarification or question. He had seen no one since, save the servitors who had stripped his armor. The cell that he had been taken to was in an unused section of the orbital plate, half a kilometer from his brother's.
"Why am I here, Captain?"
"I cannot give you answers," said Catafalque. Kestros knew it was the closest he would get to an apology, and he wasn't surprised. He had expected none. "You are being seconded from my command with immediate effect." Kestros blinked. Catafalque watched him carefully. He considered what to say. This seemed like a rebuke, like censure. But if it was, then it was for some deed he was not aware of. He disliked indirectness. There was no place for it in the Legion. They were warriors, not courtiers. He felt his annoyance rise in his blood and forced it to cool.
"As you will it, Captain," he said carefully.
"It is not his will, Sergeant,"
said a deep voice, and another warrior stepped through the door behind Catafalque. The warrior wore lacquered warplate, and a black cloak topped with white fur hung from his back. Pistons and cables gleamed between the armor plates that partially covered the warrior's right arm and leg. A mace with a black stone head hung at his waist, and he looked at Kestros with dark eyes set above a grey beard. Calm and control breathed off him as he moved. Kestros blinked and then knelt, fist thumping into his chest as a salute.
"Honored Master Arcamus," he said,
careful to keep his voice devoid of the confusion now rolling through his head. Of all the warriors of the Legion, there were many who held high honor. Lord Sigismund, Iapetus, Seneschal Ran. But Arcamus was one of the first, one of the 20 warriors who were raised to the Legion by the Primarch when he was reunited with the Emperor. With the death of Fleetmaster Yonad in the early days of the war, Arcamus was now the last of that brotherhood. For over a century and a half, Arcamus had served. He had stood at Rogel Dorn's side for the Legion's greatest victories of the Great Crusade. One did not raise one's gaze to such a warrior without being asked to. He stopped next to Catafalque and nodded to the captain.
"Will he serve?"
"He's my best. A little headstrong, but then you are used to that."
Out of the corner of his eye, Kestros saw his captain smile, the gesture as brief as a flash of lightning. Kestros blinked again.
"Enough time, and you grow to tolerate anything," said Arcamus, his voice flat and humorless.
And though he was not sure, he thought that the smile cut across Catafalque's face again.
"You have my thanks," continued Arcamus. "I hope he serves me as well as you did."
For the first time in his years of service, Kestros heard Captain Catafalque laugh.
"I hope he serves you better than that."
Catafalque gave a swift bow to Arcamus and then glanced at Kestros.
"Bring us honor in wherever your duty takes you, brother," he said.
Kestros bowed his head more deeply, but Catafalque had already turned and left the chamber.
"Rise, Sergeant,"
said Arcamus, and Kestros stood. Arcamus met his gaze.
"This is not about a stain on your honor, nor that of your company, nor is it about censure."
Kestros tried to read the old warrior's face, but could not. It was like trying to read the mood of a cliff from the shape of its crags. He had a likeness of stone, like so many of the Legion. Kestros felt the question come to his lips before he could bite it off.
"What is it about, then, Lord?"
Arcamus gave Kestros a glance that might have held either calculation or amusement.
Your legion and Primarch have need of your service, said Arcamus.
Kestros felt the words yank the breath out of his lungs. Arcamus half turned towards the door, the machinery of his arm and leg whirring in the quiet of the cell.
Arm and armor yourself, Arcamus said,
and looked at the dark of the corridor beyond the cell door. A long second passed before he continued.
You have questions, but the answers cannot be given here.
Kestros blinked. A sensation that he could not understand or process was turning over in his stomach and spreading a shiver over his skin. There had been something in the old warrior's face when he had looked at the dark, as though a thought had passed like a shadow across the inside of his skull. Kestros forced the disquiet from his mind and called for his armourers. Messalina Debris Drift, near Terran Void.
What was that?
Hissed Incarnus, twisting in his harness as a deep metallic clang echoed through the chamber. Ms. Madra had been doing her best to rest, but now she was awake, heart beating fast.
Nothing,
breathed Ashul from next to the Psyker. He had not moved, and still looked as though he were half asleep, despite the noise.
It's just stellar debris impacting on the outside. Most likely nothing larger than a seed grain.
Well, how do you know?
Spat Incarnus.
Anything larger, then it would have ripped a hole. If it were anything really big and fast, well, let's just say we would not be able to indulge in this conversation.
Incarnus hissed, his eyes swiveling between the walls. Not for the first time, Ms. Madra thought he resembled a lizard stretched into human shape. Part of her was enjoying the Psyker's discomfort, but she could not say that she shared Ashul's apparent disdain for their current situation. The chamber was not really a chamber, but an airtight cargo slab, 20 meters high and wide and twice as long. It was of the type used to convey volatile materials by the Jovian Void clans. Now its only cargo was Ms. Madra, Ashul, Incarnus, and the 5 Space Marines. They had broken Terra's atmosphere and rendezvoused with a small system ship, making runs between the void docks. Their shuttle had settled into a sealed bay, holding only the container and a cluster of servitors. They had moved to the slab-sided box and been sealed within. An hour later, they had been dumped into the void on the edge of a debris drift and left to spin, like the billions of other pieces of stellar refuse clogging the solar void. Ms. Madra did not know what they were waiting for. Her mission information had long run out by this point. The 5 Space Marines treated the situation with total indifference. Most of them remained silent and stood or sat maglocked to the wall. She'd begun to notice differences between the 5 of them, now that she had been granted the opportunity to observe them. Fokron moved without cease, as though he would vanish if he were truly still. Even in the shuttle, he had turned his head to take in every detail of his surroundings. His movements were always smooth and precise, though. They just never stopped. He had been stripping and reassembling his weapons continuously since they had entered the container. His equipment and armor was a uniform dull indigo, without mark or adornment, though his primacy was undoubtable. He was tall, though the magnitude of Space Marine physiology made it difficult to judge just how much larger than the rest he was. The one with the melter gun was called Calyx, and he wrapped stillness around himself like a cloak. He had not moved at all since they had entered the container. A serrated crest ran down the center of his helm, and his armor plates were lacquered with a subtle pattern of scales. The more she watched Calyx, the more she wanted him to move. His stillness was like a pressure on her eyes. Orn kept close to Fokron like a shadow. Slightly shorter than the others, his armor still held the dust of the Gobi Wastes in its grooves. His face was broad and his cheeks dotted with fine scars in the shapes of stars. He and Fokron spoke often, but while she heard what Fokron said, Orn never spoke above a whisper. The last of those she had dug from the dirt was called Hecaron, and was the most unusual of them all. While Fokron and Silonius looked near identical, Hecaron grinned at the world with a face that was a mass of bright green lizards tattooed in luminous dye. Rows of black pearls on silver rings hung above his right ear and eyebrow. He had pulled his helm off as soon as they were out of combat, and had not stopped smiling since. His teeth were sharp and gleaming. Then there was Silonius. The newcomer had talked little and remained on the edge of the others while being one of them. At first she wondered if that was simply because he was a newcomer to a group of bonded warriors. But that was not it. As she had watched them, she had realized that Focron, Hecaron, Calix, and Orn had no special bond. The Legion had buried them beneath the earth of the Gobi Wastes years ago, but if they had known each other before, they gave no sign. They worked smoothly together, but that could be a product of their training rather than familiarity. Silonius was not an outsider, but he seemed separate, as though he was passing through their company, as though he was waiting for something. He glanced at her, perhaps sensing her gaze, and she met his eyes for a moment and then looked away. She thought of the item she had brought with her, wrapped in ballistic cloth and carried with her wherever she went. Her own fragment of a secret she did not understand.
"Any idea how long we are going to drift here?" said Incarnus. "There is only so much air we can breathe before this place becomes a very unusual coffin. Of course, that might be the idea."
"If the Legion wanted you dead, it would already have brought it about," said Focron.
Incarnus froze.
"All of us are here because we still have a purpose."
Focron's perpetual movement had fallen away. All of the Legionnaires were now looking at Incarnus, eyes and helmet lenses locked on him.
"Of course,"
said Incarnus. Miss Madra could see his throat move under the rubber of his void suit collar as he swallowed.
"Of course."
Focron nodded and turned his gaze away. The rest of the Legionnaires followed suit a second later. Miss Madra shivered. For a second, the differences between the five warriors had vanished. They had been one, a single predator, with a united will and intent.
"Silence and patience might be a better approach to making friends," drawled Ashul.
Incarnus looked as though he was going to answer, when the entire container rang and shook. The Legionnaires moved in an eye-blink, helmets locking in place, weapons readied. A series of clanks shook through the metal walls, and then became a stuttering series of clatters.
"I think the wait is over," said Ashul.
"Either that, or everything is about to come to an abrupt end." Luna. The lighter skimmed low over the dark side of Luna. Gun turrets tracked it briefly, then heard its clearance signal and went back to covering the void. The lighter banked and descended, hugging the surface. Towers projected from the rims of crater cities. Transport ducts crossed the grey wastes between clusters of buildings. Void shields glittered above the city clusters like blisters of ice. Dead and burned ruins were dotted here and there, the edges of their metal bones catching the weak light. Terror shone as a thin crescent in the black sky, its satellite cities and defences a halo of diamonds glinting in the night. Within the lighter's small crew compartment, the sight of Luna's surface flickered beneath the static of a picked screen. The lighter was marked as one serving in the Terran militia, bonded to one of the orbital defence platforms. Its clearance was from one of the Regent of Terra's vassal organisations. Arcamus had obtained the codes without asking either the Regent or his servants.
"Approaching ordained destination,"
droned the servitor pilot.
"Proceed," said Arcamus.
"Compliance."
"This will be delicate," he murmured. "The Selenar Matriarch is an individual."
He looked at Kestros. The sergeant nodded but said nothing. Arcamus looked back to the screen.
"Do you have any questions, Sergeant?"
Kestros shook his head. His frown caught the light of the screen and sharpened the edges of his expression.
"You are troubled," stated Arcamus. "Speak your mind. You're not here to remain silent."
The frown deepened and then pinched into something sharper. He let out a short breath and shook his head without meeting Arcamus's eye.
"To speak truthfully, my lord, I'm not sure why I'm here at all."
He leant forwards before Arcamus could reply.
"I'm not a warrior of strategy or mysteries. The edge of the blade and the bolt shell are my realm. I understand what we're doing, just not my place in it."
Arcamus gave a brief smile.
And then we stand at the same place.
Kestros gave a snort of laughter, and his frown lightened slightly. Then he shook his head again, as though to clear it of thought. The lighter suddenly slammed level. The frame vibrated as thrusters fired.
Descending to landing platform, said the servitor.
The screen was suddenly filled with the coal-black cliffs and dots of light racing past in a blur.
Well, this is still a war,
said Arcamus, as the lighter shuddered down through the dark.
It is just a war with a battlefield that is difficult to recognize. We are the 7th Legion. We do not flinch and we do not fail. Our strength will serve the Primarch and the Emperor now, just as it always has before.
Kestros clamped his helm over his head, and then began to glance to either side to check squad brothers who were not there. His head twitched up towards Arcamus.
What is the root of victory?
He said.
What is the foundation of strength?
Arcamus smiled as he pulled his own helm over his head.
Focus,
he said, and heard his own voice boom from his speaker grill, as the whine of the lighter's thrusters became a scream.
But the key to strength in war is not just focus, but balance. Too much choler, and you can be blind. Too much caution, and you let the enemy strike as they would choose. So my purpose is to bring balance, then. That is why I'm here?
Arcamus said nothing. He thought he could almost feel the young warrior's anger pressing out from behind the faceplate of his armor. He could understand why. He had told Kestros about the attack within the bounds of Terra, and that they had the task of hunting down the Alpha Legion within the system. With every additional detail, he had seen Kestros's face harden. This was not an honor. It was a dark and bitter duty that had taken him away from other, purer battles. Neither the highness of the calling nor Arcamus's renown seemed to dim the core of his dissatisfaction. Secrecy, shadows, and deeds done for necessity